Well, hello there to all of our automotive enthusiast friends and car guys and gals, if you will. No matter where you're standing on this great big planet of Earth, you, for some reason, pushed that button one more time and launched yet a brand new...
A brand new compendious episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Compendious.
Amen.
Wow. That, what does compendious, what is it, etymology? Is that when you break words down? Or is that the study of bugs?
Yeah, I think that's, that might be, I don't know what it is.
Compendious. Compendious. I mean, it sounds like, to me, my guess would be something that's piled up to be a big thing.
Containing or presenting the essential facts of something in a comprehensive but concise way.
Wow, that's not this show, but cool.
That's why it's an overselling adjective, sir.
Always is. Well, you've tuned into the V8 Radio podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Ostie, joined as always by our esteemed host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark. What's good there?
Oh, man. Well, I just got back in town. I was gone for a week. Having teenage kids in band, they have a Disney trip, and my wife, Jenny, thought it would be a great idea for us to be chaperones along on that trip. And,
oh, yeah.
Get to ride a charter bus forever, it seems, all the way down to Disney, filled with a bunch of teenagers.
Nice.
And it was, oh, so nice. Oh, my goodness.
So putting some magic in the kingdom.
Yeah, I was gone for a week, and it feels like I've been gone for a month with all the, I mean, we were on the move from sunup to sundown every day. So it was something.
Riding the bus.
Yeah, and it was packed. There was not one empty seat on that bus going down there.
Right. Not so... When you were telling me about that, it kind of brought what I was talking about on our previous episode about the idea of sitting in a tin can and flying to the moon for a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden you basically did that.
Yeah, pretty much. And you said, so you still on board with that? And I said, well, maybe like 25-year-old me would be on board with that. 52-year-old me would definitely get on board with Richard Branson and Virgin Galactic, where you blast off, you're weightless for a few minutes, and then you come back down.
Right. Yeah.
That would be fun.
It's a big difference.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you know what else would be fun?
Ooh, tell me.
That would be sharing some automotive trivia questions. You know, as everybody knows who listens to this compendious pile of show knows.
I almost hit the bleep button.
That we have an automotive trivia question at the beginning, and of course the answer is revealed at the end, compelling you to stay tuned. Or
yes,
at least
please.
We'd like to think so.
Mm-hmm. It
so
works
have you,
every time.
While you were twiddling your thumbs on your Greyhound, did you come up with a trivia question?
Certainly, absolutely. And let's unleash it to the masses. All right, Kevin and masses. What early automotive pioneer's first car build was an electric car? And bonus, if you can tell me what that car was.
Oh, boy. Early pioneer. So, if I know my electric car history, which I don't, there was somebody in Michigan, I think, in Detroit, who did one at in 1901 or 2 or something. Mm. And I think that's the car. I think Leno's got one, and it still runs or vibrates or whatever an electric car does.
The motor still turns?
It turns, yes. It and he drives it every once in a while, and it's pretty cool. It looks like it doesn't really have a hood. It's got curved glass. It's a crazy looking thing. But I don't remember who made it. I forgot the company name, and I don't know if it turned into a. So you're suggesting this turned into like one of the big three or something, or just an.
I am not suggesting it turned into one of the big three.
So
I'll tell you this. The automotive pioneer name is still the car company is still in existence today.
Okay. Well, that helps, sort of. Mm-hmm. All right. So of car companies that still exist today that go back as far as an electric car. Now, here's the trick in this question, because I'm the one who took it 110, 20 years ago, and you're just saying their very first car was electric.
No, I'm saying this automotive pioneer's, his first build was electric. I'm not saying it was part of his car brand. I'm saying it was this person. That muddled it up even more, didn't it?
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk? Ooh.
Because I believe his first car was electric. And Tesla exists today. So that's my guess.
Okay. That is a phenomenal guess.
Well, again, I have no idea if I'm right. But I went to early history, and I just lost my way. So we'll say Mr. Elon.
Elon Musk. Great guess. All right. Duly noted.
All right. Okay. Here's a simple one. Right back at you. When did the first muffler law pass? And the bonus, in what state?
The first muffler law pass, and in what state? Muffler as in, what, like a noise ordinance? As in you have to have a muffler?
Yeah, like that.
Okay.
And I don't think it applied to electric cars, I'll tell you that.
All right. Okay, so when did the first muffler law pass? I'm going to say it could have been when cars started getting, clearly when they started getting numerous out there, and municipalities started taking note of the excess noise that they produced versus a horse.
Horses make noise.
Horses do make noise, but not...
Especially when they're chewing on your car.
Yeah. Car owners make more noise when horses chew on their car.
For if we have any new listeners, that happened. Mike's GTO got... It has horse damage.
It does, and it exists today, the horse damage. Okay, I'm just going to take a total wag here on this one and say the first muffler law passed in 1935.
No.
And it passed in the state of California.
Ooh, yes. California, known for regulations on motor vehicles.
Yes, they have stricter regulations than the federal regulations typically.
For sure, yeah. California Air Resources Board, the CARB standards, all that nonsense, California emissions laws, 50 state legal except for California, so that's 49 state legal stuff. So
Correct. And now they're phasing out gas-powered lawnmowers to be able to be sold, I believe.
Well, I know a few years ago they canceled all the two-stroke stuff.
Ah.
So you couldn't have a two-stroke mower, or it was also leaf blowers.
Right, string and trimmers.
And then I think you're right. Well, if I'm not mistaken, I left California a long time ago. But they were talking at the time of catalytic converters on gasoline-powered lawnmowers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that wouldn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't.
It wouldn't surprise me if they forced like electronic fuel injection and all that kind of stuff on a lawnmower as well.
Yeah. Well, that's how you improve the world, is make everything far more complicated than it needs to be to appease people that don't understand what they're talking about.
Fair enough.
In a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Which actually kind of brings me to a little bit of a, not a trivia question, but a tech question that a gentleman had in a YouTube comment on one of our videos for doing an EFI swap on a car. And he said, do you run a return or a returnless fuel system on this? Do you know the reasoning for either of those?
I would say you don't need to necessarily run a return. I think the reason for a return on a carbureted car is to prevent percolation of the gasoline. It keeps it moving. Therefore, it doesn't sit in one spot in the engine and heat up and boil. Whereas in a fuel-injected car, the fuel is under pressure, thus increasing the boiling point of the fuel. So a return system is not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Is that about right?
No.
No?
Well, that's okay.
What? That's it.
The source of a return system, of course, is emissions motivated, because on a fuel injection system, you have a high pressure pump, like you're saying, and it pushes fuel up to the engine bay where the fuel rails are attached to the intake, and you have underhood heat. So although it is under pressure, the fuel gets heated up quite a bit. So it returns back to the tank because you're bleeding off the excess pressure that's not used.
Right.
But the problem came in is that all of a sudden you're dumping hot fuel into a tank, which creates vapor.
Oh, I see.
And it manifested itself in the early EFI cars. You'd go to the gas station and you'd crack open the filler cap to refill the car.
And it'd blow off. Yeah.
You'd expend all of this vapor, especially when the tank was empty of fuel. You had more room for vapor.
Right.
And, of course, that road, well, you'd breathe it, and then it would go up into the sky, and, you know, there's that is now vehicle emissions out of the gas cap. So what they ended up doing was first, and where you live is different from where I live. A lot of the, what I will call, nonsense didn't stick in the smaller towns. But this was the dawn of the fuel vapor recovery nozzle on the gas station.
Oh,
you still have those?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't see them very often where I am for whatever reason. But that they tried to, as you pushed fuel into the tank, something had to be displaced, so they were sucking that vapor out and reconstituting it back in the tank. So they came up with this return-less system so that they're not pumping hot fuel back into the tank and causing the vapor.
Uh-huh.
And the way they got around this is they put the pump in the tank, which is great. Always recommend that. But then the fuel regulator is also in the tank. So when the pressure builds up, it bypasses right there to itself in the tank. It doesn't go all the way up to the front.
Okay.
And be regulated. So the pressure required at the rail is constant all the way back to the tank.
I see.
And the more sophisticated ones have a fuel pressure sensor on the fuel rail, where if the car is requiring more fuel, the pressure drops, and then the pump ramps up its output through a pulse width modulation controller, and it delivers more fuel as needed.
Hmm.
So the guy who asked about what do we do on an EFI swap car, well, of course, the other benefits for the OE level stuff is that you're cutting your plumbing and your, I guess, potential for leaks in half if you don't have to send the fuel back.
Yeah.
And if you save a nickel on a million cars, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
So what we find, the number one complaint with a lot of these fuel systems is we take a car that had either a return like you're talking about with a charcoal canister up in the front to try and capture those vapors, and putting a high pressure pump in an old tank or an old design tank, pump it up to the front, the pressure bleeds off, we have a return, and a vintage car tank is in no way designed to handle high pressure loads inside the tank. And in fact, many of them are vented where they got just an atmosphere vent. So they drive the car, you come home, you've got all this hot fuel in your tank and vapor, and your whole garage smells like gasoline.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And it's a big complaint. So we've been trying to do more return-less systems if the hardware supports it, if the EFI system will handle it.
Okay.
One of the drawbacks is that the fuel only goes one way in those, and you filter it in the tank. So you filter it before it gets picked up by the pump, and then you send it forward. But over time, if anything gets past that filter, the injectors are the end of the line.
Right.
So the stuff ends up collecting in the fuel rails and around the injectors, and then you get gunked up there. Uh-huh. So they recommend using chemical-based injector cleaner periodically to prevent that stuff from building up.
Makes sense.
And yeah, and that'll take care of all that. So that was a question we got again from a guy on YouTube. So if you can run, I would say run return less, where all possible.
Gotcha.
And always put the tank in the pump or pump in the tank.
And that was your technical lesson of the day, kids.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I don't remember how the hell we got there, but.
I don't either. Oh, brother.
So, bouncing off our last episode once again, where we had talked about the moon launch in 2025 mm-hmm. and painting up the Corvettes, I did realize that Chevrolet still plan to release the 2025 Corvette Zora edition.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The astronauts need that car.
Well, I kind of think so.
Yeah.
This is going to be the twin turbo 5.5 LT7 that you find in the Z06 unturboed and turboed in the ZR1 is what's supposed to happen.
Okay.
And then coupled with a hybrid electric system to create 1,000 horsepower and 1,000 foot-pounds.
Whoa.
In a C8. Yeah.
Take that, Ferrari.
Well, that's worthy of the Zora Arcus Duntoff name for sure.
I believe so.
Because he was all about high performance and how it equated to marketplace dominance and sales. And in fact, just the other day, we were talking about Zora's famous letter of 1955 mm-hmm. that he wrote to Chevrolet management. And someday on this show, we'll read that letter. But the gist of it was, here's a guy who is an engineer. He's on the Corvette program. Zora, of course, is nicknamed as the father of the Corvette. But he was complaining because in the mid-50s, if you said racing or you said high performance, everybody thought Ford. They thought Ooh. Ford beat Chevrolet to the V8, and the 32 Fords were, you know, jalopy racers, and
right.
and everything was Ford racing and Ford engines, and Chevrolet had nothing. You know, the first Corvettes were a Blue Flame 6. I mean, it wasn't until 55 that the small block Chevy came out.
Right.
So Zora wrote a letter saying, we need to change this. We need to get behind high performance 100% so that the enthusiasts and the racers will put Chevrolet engines in these cars, and then we can win some races, which turns into sales. And it did.
I think that happened. there's a ton of cars with Chevrolet engines in them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, even today, Chevrolet is still the biggest slice of the automotive performance aftermarket pie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by far.
Yeah. At one point, it was like 75-80%.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Yeah, it was. So, with that 2025 Corvette Zora coming out, might be more of our conduit to make this whole moon launch viewing with the astronaut-painted Corvettes happen.
Man, how flipping awesome would that be if that came to fruition? My goodness.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Who knows?
I'd want to be cool there when they present them.
Yeah, and I don't know how they did that. I don't know if it was like, it certainly wasn't like launch day, like, hey, here's your Corvette, get in the rocket.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. But still, holy cats.
Yeah, that would be kind of neat. And the timeline just happens to work out.
It does. It certainly does.
Huh. So I got a message the other day from our friend Yardley, who was very much distraught about a law that passed in New York State.
I heard about this law.
Yes. And Yardley's text was, "Oh my gosh, New York did it. You can't change anything on an exhaust system on any vehicle ever."
That's right.
Or you go to jail, and they've taken away the legal ability to modify a car, and this sucks.
It does suck.
Right. And so my first thought was, and it took effect on April 1st, 2022. And no, it wasn't an April Fool's Day joke.
Right. Too bad.
Right. But I decided to do a little research on this and see what actually happened, because there have been a lot of laws passed, and, you know, as you know, in any category, that when the press gets a hold of them, they're distorted, parts are left out.
Yes.
Causes widespread panic, and, you know, you really got to figure out what happened. So I happened to find some verbiage that was printed by SEMA and the SEMA Action Network, which is the legislative watchdog arm of the Specialty Equipment Market Association. Uh-huh. And I'm going to read from this.
Please.
The title is called Fact Versus Fiction, New York Exhaust Noise Legislation. In 2021, New York enacted a bill into law, the SLEEP Act, that aims to crack down on excessively loud vehicles. The law goes into effect on April 1, 2022. Unfortunately, vague local news reporting has created confusion amongst enthusiasts about what the law will actually do.
Vague, you say?
How about that?
How about that?
The SEMA Action Network is here to set the record straight, right? So if you're...
Yeah.
If your record is bent, it won't be for now. So the background was, since 2021, over a dozen states, including New York, have introduced bills aiming to curb the amount of noise emitted from a vehicle's muffler. And while no two states' means of achieving this goal have been identical, they all have one thing in common. They were requested by constituents upset by loud vehicles in their community.
Okay.
Which I actually currently am one of those.
You're a constituent with a loud vehicle?
No, I'm a constituent who's upset by somebody in my neighborhood who
really?
Goes to work at 4 a.m. with a very loud exhaust system. So,
okay.
We're all up at 4.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, yeah. So what happened? Well, for many workers across the country, the pandemic meant an unexpected shift to remote work, and as a result, people became far more aware of their surroundings and the noises that come with them, especially from cars and trucks. Many people became aware of their kids.
including yours truly.
Yeah, right. Kind of wondered if you'd pick up on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man, did I become aware.
Well, unfortunately for you, there's no muffler law on kids.
No, I'm going to introduce one next week.
Yeah, at least on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately for car enthusiasts, SEMA's government affairs staff has been successful thus far, killing or amending many of the onerous proposals before they come law. So what about New York, right? Well, the claim was that a new bill in New York will ban exhaust modifications. And SEMA claims that this is actually fiction.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we'll find out if it is or not. So reading on, in January 21, lawmakers in New York introduced a pair of bills, S.784 and A.471, if you want to check them out yourself, seeking to curb loud cars and trucks. The bills were amended several times prior to passage and were approved by Governor Kathy Hochul in late October. Importantly, the proposal did not change the state's existing exhaust noise laws, which require every motor vehicle to be equipped with a muffler in working condition and prohibits the installation of bypasses, cutouts, or similar devices.
Okay.
So that was already on the books. So cutouts, bypasses, and similar devices were illegal in New York already. Comparable language is universally used by states across the country and is designed to prevent motorists from deleting their muffler and or catalytic converter.
Okay.
I'm with you. What is the new law change? Well, put simply, it allows police to write larger fines for those breaking the existing law.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so here's where the hammer comes down. Prior to enactment, New York had one of the lowest exhaust noise fines in the country, and this bill gives police the discretion to write larger tickets that are capped at $1,000 if the situation warrants.
I see. So it really gives the existing law a little bit more teeth, is what I'm
for sure. Hearing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. I see that.
Well, there's a couple of more elements to this.
Okay.
So a claim that said New York's exhaust noise bill creates a 60 decibel muffler limit.
Okay.
SEMA deems that as fiction as well. As they mentioned before, S.784 and A.471 do not change New York's underlying exhaust noise laws. It simply gives police more discretion to enforce against bad actors. However, the initial versions of the bill were quite different from the final product, and in some, automotive media, they had used earlier versions of the bill as the reference when reporting on the proposal.
Okay.
Kind of sensationalizing that and getting feathers ruffled.
okay.
Which is what they're trying to do, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty much this what it sounds like.
Yeah. So what sort of differences are we talking about? Well, as initially drafted, cars and trucks would have been limited to 60 decibels of exhaust noise, subject to a flat $1,000 fine, and police cars would have been equipped with sound meters to help enforce the law. And that sounds pretty heavy-handed.
It does sound a bit heavy-handed.
Flat $1,000.
Yeah.
With a meter on board.
Yeah.
But none of those proposals actually made it into the final version of the bill, which is good. The decibel limit was removed, as it would have been rendered practically every car on the road illegal, you know, because you step on the gas, even in a quiet car, makes noise.
Yeah. It's going to make some noise, yeah.
And the universal fine was changed to a cap, and the sound meter concept was scrapped as well, no doubt because that involves buying something and training it and setting standards. And
right.
It's going to be louder in a New York City street than it is in a New York countryside.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. If it were in the middle of, you know, New York City, which is going to be super loud anyway, I don't know how they would focus their meter unless it was, like, right on the exhaust pipe.
Well, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but, you know, in my younger years living in the Chicago area, my first 1970 Riviera had glass packs on it. And late at night on weekends, we'd all take off and head downtown for a nice summer night cruise before we landed somewhere at an establishment of some sort.
At the bingo parlor at the YMCA.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Yeah.
INGO. So one of the fun things to do was drive right through the financial district where all the old skyscrapers against the sidewalk with the loud, you know, mufflers, and throw the car down into first gear and stand on it, and you'd hear the 455 echoing all over the chambers of the city. You know, it's killer.
Yeah.
So apparently that's not legal anymore.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love it.
So there was one more claim, and it said a letter sent to retailers and vehicle inspectors states that all exhaust modifications are illegal. All of them. SEMA, again, found that this was fictitious. So in advance of the SLEEP Act going into effect on April 1, 2022, a letter signed by the DMV commissioner was sent to automotive retailers and vehicle inspectors in the state notifying of the law change. The letters, of course, are misleading and make overly broad statements about what the new law does. Go figure.
How about that?
Yeah. As it relates to cars and trucks, the SLEEP Act added one new section to the law on which police may begin to enforce starting April 1, VTL 375-31 Part B, which states that a, quote, cutout, bypass, or similar device, unquote, may not be used to increase a vehicle's muffler noise. And as stated above, parts were already illegal for street use across the country and in New York. So once again, it restated what was already in place.
Okay.
Just making them have the ability to actually do something about it.
Okay.
So my take on all this is that once again, happily, this puts the interpretation of the infraction in the hands of the on-site police officer.
Yes. And it gives him the discretion as to whether or not an infraction has occurred.
Correct. And typically, I'm going to say for the most part, police officers don't want to write these kind of tickets.
I would agree with that, unless you're being completely obnoxious.
For sure.
But if you have a sweet, you know, Magnaflow or a nice Borla setup, and it sounds cool. Maybe it is a little louder, but it's not obnoxiously loud. I don't think anyone's going to really hassle you, unless you're looking for an excuse to pull you over.
Sure, there's that. Yeah. But I think this sleep act, which I don't know the whole thing, but the spirit of the law, if you will.
Mm.
I saw that term during the OJ trial, I think. I'm not sure what it means, but I'll use it. The spirit of the law is such that this is designed to allow people to sleep at night, right? Mm-hmm. It's called the Sleep Act.
Sure.
And have a peaceful bedroom community. So if you have your Borla's turned up to a million on your Mustang, just don't floor it coming out of the subdivision every day.
Right.
And you're probably going to be fine.
Agreed.
I don't see this as something where you're going to be buzzing down the highway with your pipes at full song and you're going to get pulled over because it's loud. I think it's more towards, you know, off hours, excessive noise when people are in their homes.
Gotcha. Yeah, makes sense. Nobody wants to be, you know, woken up by some jag-offs, you know, 1,000 horsepower Mustang with no mufflers on it.
Right.
Cruising by.
But remember, I am not an attorney and do not play one on TV and don't take any advice from me at all, ever.
Nice.
So, to our friend Yardley and everybody else who was upset by this, it does definitely feel like it's impinging on the freedom of people to modify their vehicles, because it's still, you know, there's another aspect of this that cutouts and other things are not legal and they haven't been. So mm-hmm. there could be a fight there, right? If you want to change that. I was happy to see that SEMA is on top of this.
Yes, me too. I would fully expect them to be.
Yeah. Well, that's what they do. They're sharp people in the DC office in every state's Action Network, sector, I guess. So that's cool. And SEMA, again, a lot of people say, what does this organization do? Well, what they did for us right now is researched and spelled it out so that you and I understand mm-hmm. what the problem is.
And we don't fall into hysterics over something that's not necessarily true.
Right. Mm-hmm. because I think if you read the actual code, it's all in legalese and it doesn't make a lot of sense and it's open to interpretation. I think that's part of the problem, you know, that even the law enforcement officials that are tasked with enforcing these laws, they might not have a clear understanding of what is acceptable and what's not and all that. So thanks to SEMA for dumbing that down for guys like me.
And me.
Yeah, well, it's not easy to do to go through all that stuff. So for Yardley, who's famous for having an annual party where they do a bunch of burnouts in his driveway.
Party on, Wayne.
Be glad you're not in New York is all I can say.
Yeah, right. You can sleep well at night now, Yardley.
Or at least the neighbors can.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out a way to diplomatically approach my own neighbor. This guy down the street, he's got a pickup truck. It's a killer truck. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's two of them. There's one's a diesel and the other's a gas truck. They're neighbors. Mm-hmm. And the diesel truck has the ability to be very loud if this guy gets into it. It's a Ford. You can hear the turbo spooling up. You know, you hear the exhaust. But most of the time, I don't hear him around here. I hear him when he's like, you know, when he means it. Mm-hmm. You know, like late afternoon, nobody around. If he gets on it, you know, then right. It's obvious. Rest of the time, no. But the gas truck, it's a Ram, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's got a Hemi in it, and those, they have a sound. And unfortunately, this guy's hours are such that he's got to get up way early and go to work, which is great. I'm glad he's doing what he's doing to stay alive.
Yeah.
And he likes his truck, and he you know, obviously changed the exhaust on it. I don't have a problem with that. So it's really none of my business. You know, I really...
Yeah, it's touchy. I mean, if he's waking you up in the morning, then, I mean, he's probably waking more people up as well.
I'm sure he is. I mean, we're so, half a block down, you know. Yeah, so
that's kind of an issue. Is he, like, really getting on it when he's going through the neighborhood, or is it just that loud when he's just cruising by?
I give this guy full credit. I mean, it's just that loud. And he's not revving it up or, you know, anything like that. You could tell he's kind of trying to tiptoe through. So I don't think he's intentionally being a jerk about it.
Okay.
So, you know, what do you do? He spent a bunch of money on the truck to have it perform like this. Mm-hmm. Where am I to say, yeah, you need to spend more money on it to undo or put a cutout or whatever. And I'm not responsible for his money. So
right.
Consequently, over the past several, I think it's been a year or so, probably, maybe longer. It's one of those things that at 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't have any concept of time or this could have been happening for 5 years. I wouldn't even know because it wakes me up and then I go back to bed.
Right. You get jolted awake. Where am I? And then go back to sleep.
Right. So on the outset, it really has no effect on me because I don't even know how long it's been going on. However, there are those who will say it's the long-term effects that you're not aware of and your sleep pattern's disturbed and everybody else's sleep pattern's disturbed and therefore the world is bad because of whatever.
I don't know about all that, but
have
you talked to any of the other neighbors about it?
No, but I think everybody knows.
Okay.
You know? But I live in a great place where people don't, they don't get upset about a lot of this stuff. And I'm not upset about it. It's just, it's one of those things. And at the same time, in my neighborhood, we all have our little things that we do. You know, I'm in my garage playing blues music at night with my neons on, working on cars. I'm sure nobody wants to be near that.
Are you kidding me? I would love to be near that. That'd be great.
Well, the cool thing is some of my neighbors do like to be near that.
Yeah.
And they're doing the same thing, you know.
Yeah,
so that's
right on. Yeah.
That is cool. But of course I'm considerate. I actually downloaded a decibel meter for my phone.
Oh yeah.
And as I was piecing together my audio system for the garage, which started with a vintage Marantz receiver and then kind of went up from there. I was loving it. I'm in the garage at night and even though the doors are closed, you know, it's getting a little loud. So I downloaded this decibel meter and walked around the house, walked around the garage, walked out in the street, measure the levels and they're nothing. So,
okay.
You know, as my judgment perhaps might get skewed later in the evening, as you know.
It's been known to happen in the past.
Well, you know how it is. You got the volume up on 3, and that's not enough for a little while. You kick it up to 4.
All those gasoline vapors from your vented tank getting to you?
For sure, yeah. Right. Well, and, you know, all those bingo games, they get to
you. Oh, they do. It'll lead to hysterics.
So at least I'm fairly confident that I'm not offending everybody.
Right.
In the neighborhood. Now, one thing that is kind of funny is it validated a physics principle that I was aware of, which is the concept of a subwoofer versus smaller speakers and tweeters.
Mm-hmm.
And the low bass wavelengths are much longer.
Right.
And therefore much more powerful. They travel farther.
Right.
which is why you can put a subwoofer in a corner and you can't really tell where it is in the room. But if you put your tweeters in the corner, you can zone in on exactly where they are.
Yeah, they're very directional. Yeah,
you can locate them, right? Yeah. So you put tweeters up front, you put a sub where it's convenient, and it all blends together. Well, it also seems to send those long, powerful waves across the street and into my neighbor's garage. And my neighbor Rick, who I've mentioned before, and he's like, "What were you listening to last night?" You know, one time. And he thought it was like club music, you know, like I was having a a dance party in the garage. Because he's like, "Well, I went, you know, it was like 1 a.m. or something," and he goes out in the garage and he's like, "I hear this noise. I don't know what it is. It's just this boom, 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 boom." And he's like, "I don't know if it was a spacecraft or, you know," and then he's like, "Oh, and then I see your garage lights on," and then I could hear only that.
Oh, he said,
so it didn't like wake him up or anything, but it was emanating.
That's interesting. Yeah, he just hears that low frequency. That's killer.
They have the energy to get there. So you got to keep that in mind. And it's not like, again, in my little decibel metering exercise, I wanted to make sure that, you know, that it didn't sound like the trunk of a Honda Civic that was vibrating.
Oh, yeah. And you hear the license plate rattling and all that.
You know, like my siding is, you know, buzzing all over the house, and like garbage cans tipping over and all that. So it's not that either.
That dang Oastie guy. Oh, my gosh.
I know. We're finding out that this guy causes problems in the neighborhood. Yeah. But I also, you know, again, when Rick told me that that those long waves were getting to his house, then it was like, ooh, yeah, sorry. So kind of turn that down a little bit. Yeah. And in some cases, switch to headphones. You know, you can do that too.
Yeah, that's just true. This is true.
Yeah. And then you can be like Kelly, who has our riding lawnmower at, you know, full RPM and full throttle as she cuts the grass with a set of headphones on, singing country music at the top of her lungs, which is louder than the lawnmower.
That's awesome. That's actually, that's funny you say that, because when I cut my grass, I'm wearing headphones and I'm piping music through it, and I'll belt out a tune sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And Janie says, "You know the whole neighborhood can hear you singing." I'm like, "Oh, really?
That's right.
Well, you're welcome."
That is, you know, but that's a nice, fun thing to do. You're on the mower and you can't hear it, you know.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Speaking of good stuff, you just had your new Bonneville Up to Speed podcast launched the other day.
Yeah. Right. Hey, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. For sure. It is officially called the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. It's available everywhere. Kind of did a soft launch, if you will, to make sure that it did show up everywhere and it played and all that stuff. But our first guest was Steve Watt from Maxwell Industries. And Steve and his team built the Speed Demon 715 race car.
Mm.
So George Poteet's fastest piston-driven vehicle in the world.
Whew.
And the story of that streamliner is, it's just amazing what these guys do to make that thing happen.
Yeah.
And the purpose of the Up to Speed podcast, you know, that's a superhero car, but that's not all we're going to cover. I want to get into, you know, the small displacement motorcycles and things that look like streetcars and Lakesters and everything in between. So, Steve's got a great background. He grew up around racing, and his business, which we didn't talk about at all, in addition to having the fab shop, and, you know, this guy can make anything. He used to work at Duttweiler's engine shop and builds headers and bikes, and I think he's got 4 streamliners in the shop right now he's working on. But the meat and potatoes comes from shock dynos.
Really?
Yeah, did we ever talk about this before?
No.
So the shock dyno concept is you can he sells these machines, and I think he builds them and modifies them and adapts them. So like a race team can, you know, spec out and tune shock absorbers on a machine that puts them through their paces.
Okay.
Well, it's extremely helpful on a race course, but it's not a huge market, okay, you know, to sell shock dyno machines. Unless you're a smart guy like Steve Watt and you are traveling one day and you're in a town or a city that has a municipal rail system and you look out the window and you notice that that municipal rail system has shock absorbers on the trains.
Oh, on the trains. Yeah.
Right. Like the L train in Chicago or the BART up in San Francisco or the New York City subway, right? These all have suspension systems on the light rail.
Right.
And he also noticed that, oh, that one's leaking, and that one looks like it's shot, and this train is rocking back and forth. So he does a little research, and he finds out that, I don't know if it was Philadelphia, but it was some big city, they'd inspect these things, you know, a couple times a year, look at them, and if they're visibly worn out, they'd scrap them and buy a new set and put them on.
Okay.
He's like, no. Send them to me. I'll put them on the shock dyno and we'll verify if they're still good or if they need to be rebuilt.
Oh.
We'll rebuild them. And if they're completely shot, then you buy a new one.
Okay.
For a service contract.
Yeah. Nice. That's smart.
Awesome. Incredibly smart, right? Yeah. So he was able to save these municipalities hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in just replacing these shock absorbers. And not only is he able to save them the money, but with the shock dyno service, he's able to make recommendations on how to tune these things so that the ride is better for the passengers and they last longer. And then he rebuilds them. And I mean, that's super cool.
That's brilliant.
It is.
I mean, who would have thought of that? Nobody. Except
Nobody.
Him.
Clearly. Except the guy that built the fastest piston car in the world, you know?
Yeah. I guess he's demonstrated his intelligence. So, like, of course he would think of that.
Repeatedly, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to me to see those, you know, the streamliners, because you don't have a lot of real estate under the skin, and you got to fit the power system, the drive system, the suspension, the fire system, the electronics, the fuel, the coolers. And he was talking about how that Speed Demon car, it's 40 some hundred pounds.
Wow. Really?
Yes. And that's counterintuitive to what you would think.
Yeah. You think they try to make it as light as possible, but I guess you need some stability at that high speed as well.
And you need traction is the biggest thing.
And you need traction. Yeah, that does help.
Because the salt can be like ice. So when you got a couple thousand, 3,000 horsepower in something, you need to have it stick to the ground so that it hooks up and goes. And the aerodynamics of the streamliner are such that, I think he said, over 300, it's like rock steady.
Wow.
And three to, you know, they've had it to 483, I think, and it was like perfect. But the lower speed aerodynamics aren't quite the same.
Hmm, okay.
It's designed to be stable at max speed, velocity, yeah. So I mean, just those considerations, and you know, it is rocket science on wheels. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So
yeah, that is something I'd love to see. I'd love to see that Speed Demon roll across the salt one day. That would be pretty spectacular.
It is. So you can hear about that on the episode one of the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. Yeah. And overall, I was pretty happy with the episode. Steve was great, of course, and the content. He had a little bit of a phone thing going on.
Oh, did he?
That muffles out a little bit here and there, which I wasn't super happy with, but it's compelling enough to where I think you just kind of ignore that and go on.
I gotcha.
So the cool thing is, again, with my soft rollout, I'm not the guy who's going to be banging the drum and flying the flag saying, hey, everybody needs to listen to this. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of dropped it out here and there. And interestingly enough, some pretty big names in the land speed world grabbed it, shared it, said this is cool, said, hey, we need this.
Nice.
So an upcoming guest is going to be Wayne Jezel from the Jezel Valve Train Company.
Oh, right, Dan. Right.
And what they do, they're unbelievable. Dan Jezel built, and you might have remember seeing this at the PRI show in 2018, but he built his very own design V8 engine. It's called the Equal 8, in which he centered all the rockers over the chambers, and the length of the runners is all identical and symmetrical and perfect, so that every fuel, every cylinder gets the right fuel and the right ignition. And
I gotcha. I think clean. I remember that.
He won the Masters of Motors trophy that year, which was that big giant billet trophy given away by race winning brands and JE Pistons. And I actually interviewed him about that at PRI when he won that. But his brother Wayne drives the car, and they have a they've got a pickup truck, and I think we'll find out, but I think it's a NASCAR truck chassis type thing. So it's this yellow land speed pickup truck, and that Equal 8 engine was designed for the Salt. It was designed to be a land speed racing engine.
Oh, really?
And in the past, this truck has run other NASCAR engines as they're sorting it out. But one of the greatest things about the Jezels is they identify other people who want to run, want to drive, want to get their red hat, their 200 mile an hour hat, but maybe don't have a car or a team. So they put other people in the car to get their licenses and their records.
Oh, that's killer.
So Steve Watt drove that car, and he said he thinks he's one of the fastest, the shortest duration people to go from a non-licensed Salt racer to having not only a 200 mile an hour hat, but a record, because it happened in one day.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
Yeah. And our friend Zach Straits, you remember Zach? He's always with the Automotive Media Enthusiast Media Network and hanging out at the McCacken show. He went 253 in that truck last year. They let him drive it. And our friend Chris Raschke with ARP, he drove it and got his red hat in that. And it's just an awesome program to let other people have that opportunity. So after we released the Up to Speed podcast, I got a message from Wayne Jezel that he wants to, so he's our next guest.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a lot of cool stories.
Right. And I'm very happy because this is, the goal of this is to raise the awareness and get people excited about land speed racing.
Sure, man. Well, it's cool. I mean, it's perfect.
It is cool. Land speed racing is one of the coolest things ever. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's not enough out there sharing it, I think, so.
Agreed. Well, you're doing the community a big favor, so kudos.
Well, I hope so. Really, it's just my chance to hear these stories.
Well, I mean, and for others to hear them, too, so that's even better to really get them out there.
Yeah, hopefully. So I think we have, like, 11 people that like our Facebook page now.
Heck yeah.
So I don't know if you can feel the heat from the world being on fire.
I'm one of them.
All right. Yeah. You're a solid 10% of our
fans. Well, I am a 10%er. There you go.
All of a sudden, you become Mr. Listener.
Nice.
And the circle of life goes on.
It does. It does indeed, man. Well, good stuff.
That's great.
Oh, man.
So, hopefully you're able to unwind from your bus trip.
Oh, shoot, man. Yeah, I got back. We got back late Thursday night, and I took the day off Friday from work. There was no way I was going to go in, so I already had that planned out. So I got a nice three-day weekend to kind of unwind and, you know, do stuff and or do nothing as whatever I see fit. So
that's very nice, yeah. Nice. My dad used to tell me when he was in the Air Force in, I guess he was in South Carolina, he would take the bus back to Chicago whenever he got leave. And back in those days, the cool kids called Greyhound the dog.
Did they?
He'd ride the dog home. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
And this was those old AmeriCruiser or the Scenic Cruiser.
Yeah. You know,
the 1.5 level bus.
Mm-hmm.
That you only see in films that are either Forrest Gump or about the civil rights movement. That's the only time you see those buses in movies.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
It checks out.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
All righty. Well, obviously being at the Magic Kingdom for the past week, you didn't get much done on the GTO, which is fine.
Nope. I got nothing done.
But we will touch base again next time. And in the meantime, seeing that we had all that hot air about exhaust laws, people are wondering about our trivia questions.
Nice. All right, let's reveal the answers. All right, so Kevin, I asked you what early automotive pioneer's first car build was electric. And you
early? Did you say early the first time?
I absolutely did.
Ah, man.
Yeah, well, you know, it's okay. It's all right.
You
said Elon Musk, and it was a Tesla. Well, it's probably true that his first build was electric, but this is not the answer we were looking for. This early automotive pioneer was none other than Ferdinand Porsche. In 1898, Ferdinand Porsche designed the Egger Lahner C2 Phaeton.
Of course he did.
Yeah, it was a vehicle powered by what was called an octagonal electric motor. With 3 to 5 PS. I don't know what that means, but it reached a top speed of 25 kilometers per hour.
Yeah, I think I saw him parked out in front of Walmart the other day.
Yeah, I think I saw it too.
Dr. Ferdinand Porsche.
Yes, sir.
So you did say early, and then I heard it, and then went there, and then forgot it, and went modern.
Yeah, well, it happens. It happens.
But I still think Elon's first car was electric. Sticking to it.
Fine. All right.
Good question.
Thank you.
I honestly wouldn't have thought Dr. Ferdinand Porsche did that. Yeah. But he was a kind of a contrarian, so it makes sense.
All right.
So I asked you, when did the first muffler law pass and in what state? And your guess was 1935. In the great state of the People's Republic of California.
Yes, California. As they say.
Oh, boy. Unfortunately.
Ooh, there it is.
Neither one of those are correct.
Oh, well, come on. All right.
I didn't write history. I just reported.
I know.
On May 18th, 1905.
Wow.
The great state of Oregon passed a law that required vehicles to have, quote, a light, a muffler, and efficient brakes, unquote. So.
Wow, as early as 1905.
Yeah, people drove like hell out there even back then.
I guess so.
You need to put a light on that thing and get some brakes.
God, I can't see it.
Quiet it down.
It's 4 a.m. and you're waking me up.
That's right. With your dance party.
With your dance party music you got going on and your loud horses. Come on.
Yep.
Man, that's crazy. That's a great question, but an even crazier answer. My goodness.
So what that tells you is enthusiasts have been, raging against the machine for
over 100 years.
117 years now, yeah. And you got to keep that fight going.
That's right. We needed. If we had SEMA back then, maybe the laws would be different now.
That's right. Or at least they'd be more understood.
Right. Well, that's, better point.
So that we can operate within them.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about interpretation. Just ask Smokey Eunuch.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this was nice to catch up. I'm glad you survived your trip.
Yeah, thanks, man. Good to be back.
Yeah, great point by Yards to bring up that legislation thing because, maybe as members of whatever media that we're members of, it's partially our duty to help share the truth and enlighten people on that stuff. It still sucks, but at least it's not as much of suck as you thought.
Yeah, it's definitely important not to get taken in by, hearsay and half-truths and guesses and things like that, and to really go to the source and know exactly what it says. So, great on SEMA for putting that out.
Well, and the cool thing too is that SEMA is now doing individual memberships.
Right.
So if want to get involved, you want to be a volunteer, if you want to contribute to their ability to stay on top of this stuff, you can join, and that's where that money goes.
That's fantastic. I remember that they announced that right either before or after the last SEMA show.
Yeah,
they talked about the individual
right before that.
Yeah,
and then also with PRI. So cool.
Yep.
All right, my man.
All right, here we are.
Yeah, I'm out. I got nothing. Flamed out.
Yep, flame out. Same.
All right. Well, if you enjoy this kind of stuff, please click that subscribe button or go to the website, varadio.com. You can leave comments there or on our Facebook page. And if you know anybody else that you'd like to torture with this program as well, share it with them.
Please.
I'm sure they'll thank you for it.
They might drive by your house at 4 a.m. at wide open throttle for it.
Yeah, with this crappy show cranked up all the way. See what you did?
You dirty jagoff.
Right. All right, man. Well, for Mr. Mike Cueball Clark, I'm your host, Kevin Oste, reminding you to keep it apparently under 60 decibels, and we'll see you next time on VA Radio.